Okay, this is the. My name is Jenny Nelson, and this is on resources for the hunger issue. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through what I have, and then I thought we would open it up for discussion, because that way I can get through the resources, and then we can have questions. So if you have any questions, please just jot them down. I'm going to start by talking about Bread for the World, since that is the organization that I work primarily with. I have here today a basic pamphlet on Bread for the World, and I'd really encourage you to take one. I have lots of them. And if you don't know, Bread for the World is a citizens' lobby organization that works on both domestic and international food issues. We are not, as some people might think, a relief organization. We do not dispense any of our own funds. All of our funds, in terms of money being put out, is through the legislature, through our Congress, because what we work is for legislation that we see is just for the poor and the needy. And not only for the poor and the needy, but also we're also involved in farm issues, and that there'd be just price supports or whatever. I mean, that's just an example. Grain reserves, we worked on grain reserves for farmers. And so one way that I think that you can have a productive response to the hunger issue right off the bat is join Bread for the World. Because what happens when you join Bread for the World is, I didn't bring them last time, I got a lot of my material taken, and I've got to write and get some more. But when you join Bread for the World, every month you get a newsletter which tells you about the up-to-date legislation that's in Congress, and what you can write to your congresspeople about. And we find that this does have an effect. Bread for the World is not what you would call a professional lobby. It's a citizens' lobby, in that we do not have paid people. We have paid people, but we don't have paid people who spend all their time on the Hill just talking to congresspeople. Basically, how we function is that we deal with letter-writing campaigns, call-in campaigns, for legislation. We do, however, have people who work in Washington, D.C. with the Congress people to write legislation. So we have what you would probably call issue analysts who write legislation and get sponsors. One of the biggest ways that Bread for the World sees as a productive response to hunger is to write to your congressperson. I don't know the exact statistics, they change from state to state, but for every letter that a congressperson gets on a certain issue, they classify that as so many thousand votes on that. So let's say they would get 10 to 20 letters in favor of an issue. Well, that might classify to them, I'm just kind of throwing out arbitrary numbers, it's according to the density of population of a state, but let's say 20,000-30,000 votes on people saying this is how we feel on this issue. So it does make a difference. I just want to quickly explain two things, both one domestic and one international, that Bread for the World has been doing in the past few years to work for the alleviation of hunger. One on an international level is called the Targeted Aid Amendment. And what this is that we have an organization called the International Development Agency. And the International Development Agency is basically the agency that dispenses the funds that Congress puts out for development. And that would be anywhere from building grain silos in a third world country to giving aid to build bridges, that kind of aid. It's differentiated from military aid, even though sometimes in a congressional package they get mixed up, such as if any of you have heard of the Caribbean Basin Initiative. That kind of aid was being mixed. And what we were trying to get to happen was to have 50% of the aid that is funded through the International Development Agency be targeted towards what's considered the poorest of the poor by the World Bank. And that would be probably oftentimes landless people or people who have very small land holdings. And what happened to that legislation was interesting was that as it actually came out, only 40% was targeted, and it was a non-binding one-year resolution. So basically it lost a lot of its clout, but we are continuing to work on that. On the domestic level, there's a current legislation called the Preventing Hunger at Home Resolution. Now, probably most of you know the difference between a resolution and a law, but I'll quickly just say that a resolution is basically non-binding, a law is binding. A resolution is saying this is the feeling of the Congress, and how a resolution has clout is that what they're hoping with this is that if the resolution passes, that it will have clout in the budget committee, because that's when it all breaks down. I hope that I'm not confusing anybody. What an example would be, the resolution is asking for there to be a halt to any further cuts in programs such as child nutrition, WIC, women's infants and children, the elderly nutrition programs, food stamps, the congregate dining. Well, that would be the elderly, but also the supplemental food programs to the daycare centers. A lot of the daycare centers are supplemented by the federal government, and so that if this resolution passes, hopefully then that will be reflective in the budget. So you may see the difference. It's not a law. It's not saying, okay, this is exactly how much money we're going to spend on this or spend on that. So that is, I just wanted to give those two examples because those are two what I consider productive responses to hunger. Bread for the World has many different areas it's working in. One way that it's working with the churches is in a program that some of you mentioned your church is part of. It's called a Covenant Church Program. I only have one brochure, so if you're interested, please let me know and I can have one sent to you by the national office. I'm ordering more. But basically what it is it's a program to increase awareness for a church. They get lots of different information. They get this quarterly called Leaven, which has lots of things that you can do in your church. It's got a Bible study. It has a sermon notes, a litany, responsive scripture, and then in each quarterly is included a bulletin insert. They also oftentimes will send a lot of other material, and will have a person from the national office, or let's say like a person like myself working with the church to help in awareness on the hunger issue. Another program Bread for the World has, and if you know some young person or a retired person that would be interested in this, is Bread for the World has an internship program that is real exciting. I had an intern work with me during the month of January, and it was extremely helpful. And interns work on many different levels, but some of them stay in Washington, D.C., working right there in the national office. Most of them are sent out to local areas to work with the organizers there to help. Because as probably most of you know, it's awfully hard when you have projects to get enough people to be able to put enough hours, because most people have to work and don't have the time to be able to really organize an event or an area to be able to work on the hunger issue. One of the ways that I think for us we can get our people involved is through a phone tree. Have any of you ever been involved in a phone tree? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just basically explain what a phone tree is. It's a means by which people can get information out very quickly. And we find that our quick line or phone tree, we have 50 people on our phone tree in Sioux Falls. So let's say there would be a piece of legislation that was going to be voted on Friday. And we had our senator, let's say it was in the Senate. Our senator was really kind of not sure how he was going to vote, or let's say he was sure he was going to how he was going to vote and it was against it. Well, we wanted to mobilize a lot of people to say, all right, this is how we're feeling on this piece of legislation. Will you please vote a certain way, the way that we see as profitable? Well, New York would call Daryl and myself, or we have an alternate person who's called. Then what we would do is we would call the person we have. It's like a tree. We're at the top of the tree. It's not New York, it's Washington. They just moved from New York to Washington. They would call us. Then we would call down the line through those 50 people. And how we set our phone tree up is, let's say I called Ann. Ann wasn't home. I called Ann again. Ann wasn't home. I would go on to the next person down the list. So you keep going down the list until you get to the bottom of the list. So every person is theoretically only calling one other person until that last person. And you have a list. You have the phone tree set up right by your phone so you know who's at the end. That last person calls the first person again. This might be a little confusing. I didn't get it all typed up and mimeographed off. I'm going to do that for the next time I do it. But if you are interested in this, please come and talk to me, because I'd be glad to explain it in more detail. Because there are some, we've been doing this phone tree for our particular phone tree for 3 years, that there's some things that don't work and some things that work. One thing that we find doesn't work is having people call more than two people. People get pretty discouraged if they have to call more than two people. And people say, well, that's, I'm kind of leery of doing that because I might not even know what I'm voting on. Normally, we get a message that's fairly self-explanatory of what the issue is. And if you've been at all up on anything, it would be probably an issue you'd be aware of. And you are told verbatim what to say to your congressperson, and then you are to write that message down verbatim and continue it on. Otherwise, have you ever played that game where you whisper a message in the ear around the circle, and then by the time it gets back to the original person, it's a totally different message? So if you're interested in the concept of the phone tree, please talk to me, because if you don't know, like let's say you are a member of Bread for the World, Bread for the World at the national office will be glad to send a listing of all of the people who are members in your area if you'd like to form something like this. You don't even have to do it with Bread for the World members. You can do it with people who are merely interested. So that's the quick line. The next thing I want to talk about is, I think, real exciting. We're doing it in our county, which is Minnehaha County. If I didn't say it, I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's called the Hunger Watch. Have any of you heard of this?
No.
This is being done on a national basis, and what it is it's a survey finding out what the results of the budget cuts on food programs have been from October of 81 to the present. It basically deals with six different areas of the hunger programs. It deals with the food stamp program, the WIC program, the school lunch and school breakfast programs, the child care food programs, elderly nutrition programs, and private and volunteer agencies. And what's nice about this Hunger Watch is that it's totally set up for you. They have press releases. They explain you about what the organizations are. If you don't know what it is, they have a page before each of the programs to say, okay, this is what the WIC program is. This is what the food stamp program is, if you're not aware. And then a list of questions, such as in the example of food stamps. You would contact your food stamp representative, or the person who would be the administrators of the food stamp in your county. And then the second part of it would be talking to an actual food stamp recipient. Just as maybe a point of interest, what we have been finding in Minnehaha County is that statistically we are not finding as much of a as strong results as we thought. But interestingly enough, where we're finding our largest increase is in the private and volunteer agencies. And basically and they are not such as food banks, as you were talking about. Mm-hmm. emergency types of services, soup kitchens, places that are just kind of giving out the aid on a short period of time. And so I guess what we're beginning to start to conclude is possibly there are a lot of people who are falling through the cracks, people that perhaps in the past would not have used these services, such as, take a classic example, we live in a town with a large stockyards and we have Morrell's meatpacking. People being laid off, men or women who might have had high paying jobs, own a home, own a car, might have a camper or something like that, have a lot of bills. All of a sudden they're unemployed. They might have three or four children and things are pretty rough, and they're having to perhaps go to some of these agencies that they might not have ever had to do before, not qualifying for any of the programs at the present. Because, like, let's take food stamps for example, you cannot get, for a lot of people, let's say if they're in an emergency situation, they can't qualify for food stamps because you have to go a whole month with your income being below a certain level before you can qualify for it. So let's say you lose your job, you don't have any benefits, you have to wait a month before you can even apply to get the assistance. So there's a lot of people who might be having a period during that time where they're kind of not having any thing, at least within the government, that they can qualify for. So I think this is a very exciting thing that is what I think mobilizing to find out in your local area what's happening with hunger. As you were saying in Seattle, you're finding out just specifically what's happening. The results of this are going to be used in congressional hearings for the Preventing Hunger at Home resolution. And so they are hoping to get people in counties all over the country to be doing this. I'm going to be helping coordinate the distribution of this on a statewide level in South Dakota. We're hoping to have steering committees set up throughout the state to implement this. We see it particularly important in counties that have high Indian populations, since they seem to be being hit quite hard.
Do you get this bulletin from your county seat, or where does it come from?
Well, this, you mean this particular thing? Mm-hmm. No, this is put out by the National Office of Bread for the World.
Oh,
any of the information that I have shown you so far comes from Bread for the World, and if you want that address, I would recommend you taking one of these,
okay.
And there's the address is right inside, and they will send you a materials catalog,
mm-hmm.
so that you could send for any of this material.
I see.
So I think that Bread for the World also has a number of hunger Bible studies. This one I would highly recommend. This is not just on the hunger issue. It's called Hunger and Oppression, Justice and Hope, 7 Bible Studies. Something that would be very interesting to use in your church group. I have these for sale for $1.25 each if you'd be interested in buying one. They also have put out a Land and Hunger study that's very good on more on the international global situation. Bread for the World also with Paulus Press published this, Cry Justice, by Ron Sider, who was here last year. It's scripture on all different issues having to do, with the poor and justice issues. Now I'm going to go into some more independent types of things. I brought lots of books, but since we're on the subject of Bible study, I developed a Bible study that basically is taken quite heavily from Ron Sider's book, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, which maybe some of you have heard of. That book I would highly recommend. It's published by InterVarsity Press. It was taken out of the bookstore, out of the library. All of the books that I have here are from the library, except for this one. And so I did not check any of these out. I have an agreement. I just bring them over and I just take them all back. So if you'd be interested in looking at any of these, they will be back in the library this afternoon. But this is a Bible study that I developed, and I want you to feel free to take a copy if you'd like. They're free. And basically, it's not all my notes and everything, but it's just a series of questions. And I have it set up in 3 weeks. I found when I did it that it really needs more like 4 or 5 weeks. Some of these questions are quite, bring out a lot of discussion. So I would recommend rather than 3, maybe 4 or 5 weeks for that. Another thing that you can do in your church or even in your community is a hunger awareness dinners. Have any of you ever done a hunger awareness dinner?
Mm-hmm.
How did that go over when you did that?
Well, it was on campus where the students that wanted to take their meal costs and give it to World Hunger would have just soup and crackers. Uh-huh. While the other students could go through the other line and have their meal.
Right.
And there was a lot of response to it.
That's wonderful.
And then we had a slide showing at the same time, so you lost your appetite anyways.
Yeah.
And we saw some of the results of malnutrition throughout the world.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, there's so many different ways that you can organize a hunger awareness dinner. This particular book by Aline Van Beelen, I'll leave it up here so if you want to look at it afterwards, basically describes 3 different types of dinners that you can do. I have done one with young children. I did a program at a school, and I wasn't scheduled to come and speak over the dinner hour, so what I did was, it was kind of a simulation. I just cut out lots of pictures and would give the children pictures of the food that they had. But it still evoked a lot of discussion, and these were young children under the age of 10, and they were very open to talking about it. So I think this is something that's more of a, is something that your church group or your community group could do and involve a lot of people. And there's just 3 different ways you could do it, but it would more just give you an idea of how you could take off from it. Another idea, if we have a teacher here, mm-hmm. is an organization called Food First has put out a series, a curriculum. Now, I don't, the other person who works with me with Bread for the World in Sioux Falls has the rest of the curriculum because she is a teacher. But I did want to bring this because it does have the address where you can send for their curriculum. They have set up a curriculum you can use in the schools. And this is just a comic book that explains some, it's probably geared more to like above a 4th or 5th grade level. But that's something else. Food First, if maybe any of you have heard of the book Diet for a Small Planet, that's a fairly well-known book. Frances Moore LePay and Joseph Collins were the 2 people who started this. And they also wrote a book called Food First, Beyond the Myth of Scarcity. And it has definite ideas about what the causes of world hunger are. And you might agree, you might disagree, but I think it would be a very interesting book. Speaking of books, I'm not going to go through all of them because I'd like you to perhaps just come up and glance through them. I put them kind of in topics. I just want to keynote a few of them because I think that there are some that I think are particularly appropriate to those of us who are interested in a Christian perspective. Farming the Lord's Land. Have any of you ever heard of Charles Lutz? He's fairly well known in the American Lutheran Church. It's forwarded by Bob Berglund, who is the former Secretary of Agriculture. And this is an interesting book, particularly if you're involved in any way or have anyone who you're close to who is involved in agriculture. Some of the topics are U.S. farming and world food needs, U.S. farmers and our public food programs, family farming, does it serve the common good? Our Bread for the World group studied this over the course of about 6 months, and it was very interesting because we live, you know, South Dakota. That's our main thing is agriculture, and we had a man who was a farmer who was involved in our study, which made it infinitely better to have a person. I would recommend if you do this book in your church to get a dialogue between people who are involved in agriculture and people who are not. This is a book that I found very interesting. I saw it in the bookstore. lean years of politics of, in the age of scarcity. Richard Barnett is an extremely articulate person. He's the coordinator of the Institute for Political Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. And this book really opened my eyes even more to the complexities of the hunger issue. There are two books here that are out of the bookstore, out of the library, I mean, but are very, very good. And one is called Bread and Justice by James McGinnis. And that, to me, is one of the best books out. It explores also the idea of the new international economic order, which if you ever want to get a rousing debate going, just start talking about that. But I would highly recommend that book. And the other book, as I mentioned before, would be Rich Christians in Age of Hunger. Coming, some of the statistics at the beginning are a little bit dated, but the scriptural way of going at it is very interesting. This is another book that our group studied, and there is a study guide that goes with this book. It's called Hunger for Justice, The Politics of Food and Faith. And this man, Jack Nelson, works with Church and Laity Concerned, if any of you have heard of that organization. He's in Minneapolis right now. I have a number of books on lifestyle, and because, as some of you were mentioning, trying to change your, possibly simplifying your lifestyle, this book is very, very good. It goes along, if any of you have ever seen the More with Less cookbook, that's my cookbook. That's the cookbook I use more than any other cookbook. And the same author, Living More with Less. It was very interesting. This woman is a real inspiration to me. She died of cancer before this book was even published, but she really was instituting these things in her life. She's a Mennonite woman. How to Live Better on Less, A Guide for Waste Watchers, Earthkeeping, Christian Stewardships on Natural Resources, Congregational Lifestyle Change for the Lean Years. I don't know if any of you were here last week and met Roger Harms. He was a physician who was here, and he came to my session last week, and he said that his church used this, and it was very effective. A covenant group for lifestyle assessment, and it's week by week. It gives you all kinds of ideas of what to do each week, and I think this would be an excellent resource. I brought this book because it's written by one of my best friends, Jerry Folk. This just came out from Augsburg Press. It's called Worldly Christians, A Call to Faith, Prayer, and Action, and more of the theology behind this whole issue, not just hunger, but justice. And I told him that I would plug his book this summer. I'm going to ask the bookstore to get it. They already have one of his books called Peaceways, which he is in the bookstore. Let's see. Oh, I also brought some cookbooks. As I said, More with Less cookbook is my favorite. It must be out because I tried to get it and it wasn't in the bookstore. Great Meatless Meals. I think that, as you probably have noticed, Holden tries to, well, Marianne's been here longer than I have, but I think much longer than I have, but Marianne, I think Holden is trying to strike a balance, not cutting meat totally out, but just saying we don't need to be eating as much meat as we are, and seeking alternatives. More Than Bread, and an alternative eating style booklet that was put out by students of Whitworth's college, and I thought that was an exciting idea, something that you might want to do in your area. Get together some people to put together a cookbook. I think ownership is the best way to get people involved. If they feel a sense that they have contributed, people are much more likely to respond. A book that I think is wonderful to use with children is a little book called Loaves and Fishes, and it has lots of little anecdotes in through it, plus a lot of recipes that your children can do with you. I want to see where I am on all of this. last week some people had mentioned that they had had organized fasts, that some people would fast and then they would have people pledge money for however many hours they would fast. Also in our area we've had what are called hunger walks, runs, bikes, bicycles, another idea of pledging money, and often you'd have some sort of educational thrust to go with it, whether you'd be showing a film strip, a slideshow, something like that. But the idea of getting people to pledge money, there's something intrinsically involved when you put down something of yourself. It gets you involved in it. Rather than just acting as the silent watcher, you're more the participant. And that's what I find is one of the keys in the whole hunger issue, is to somehow get people feel linked to other people. Whether that be giving a dollar to have somebody walk, or whether it be giving some food to the food pantry, whether it be writing a letter to a congressperson, all of these things are actions that people have to take time and thought to do. And I think for me, I like this afternoon, I really haven't gone into the whole philosophy of why I've done this. I didn't think there was time to do that. Basically, what I thought when I was doing this session was that I wanted to make resources known to those people who have already might have grappled with some of these issues. Next week, I am going to be offering a basic cause, hunger, world hunger basic cause session. But here, I just felt like I would like to make some things aware to you that maybe you didn't know about, and also now at this time to open it up for anything that you've done in your area or ideas that you've had.
Well, one of the ideas that we have in our church was at the beginning of Lent, there years and years and years ago when we had the Lent regulations for fasting and all, people did a lot of it, but that's all gone by the boards, you know. But now they have, at the beginning of Lent, they have the Cooperation Rice Bowl. And on Ash Wednesday, they the church gives or passes out, or anyone who wants to can take just what looks like a replica of a rice bowl, sort of. And it's the idea is that you're supposed to cut down on your meals and keep thinking about the hungry. And each time that you save so much from, for instance, saying, well, I wanted to have steak tonight or something. No, I'm not going to. I'll have macaroni and cheese or something. And what I think is the difference in the money that I would have spent, I'll put in the rice bowl for the hungry. And it's been really quite successful. Then on Easter Sunday, everyone brings the money that they have saved or sacrificed enough so that they've put some money aside for the hungry, and then they bring it and then it's sent in for the world hungry.
That's great. You know,
I think it's worked out pretty well.
I think that's wonderful. You know, one thing that I often get a response I get when someone says something like this is, well, you know, that's really wonderful and all, but I mean, what is that really going to do? And I think that for me, I say, okay, well, now in the systemic causes of hunger, it's really not going to do very much. But what it is going to do is, I believe in grassroots movements. I believe in the grassroots movement of the people. And when enough of the people begin to feel a certain way, then I think there will be a movement. Our time is just almost up, and I want to ask for more ideas, but I guess I just want to end my part by saying that I just, as I have become more aware of this issue, and I'm still quite a novice in understanding the complexities of the issue, the more I become aware, the more my first reaction is futility and grief, because I see that it's not one cause, it's not one simple answer. It's tied in with so many different things. Mm-hmm. It's tied in with the arms issue, it's tied in with a trade issue, it's tied in with distribution, it's tied in with famine, it's tied in with greed, right. One of the deep underlying things. It's tied in with people not being able to manage their resources. But that I have to believe that Jesus Christ came and did miracles on earth, and what the biggest miracle that he did was to change people's hearts. And I feel that for me, if I can in some way change another person's heart in feeling more love and compassion for their brothers and sisters who are bodily and flesh part of the same human race, then we have taken a step in the right direction. And so without trying to sound too simplistic or too naive, I wish I was more naive now, I wish I was. I think that at the base, this is out of our hands, and it is out of our hands, and yet mysteriously and mystically Christ said that we were his hands and his feet and his body. And so I would end my part with that, but open it up now for if people have to go, that's fine. But I would really like to hear about anything else that someone else has done, or any questions that you would like to ask me.
I guess I could just relate to what the winter community of the village does. Similar to your Operation Rice Bowl, we have community meetings once a week, and at the beginning of a winter program, when people come to study, one of our issues that we first talk about is having a potato meal. And there's been a potato meal in the village for years and years, which means once a week, for one meal, we have potatoes, and that's it, and a little margarine and milk.
Yeah.
And then that money is compiled at the end, and then we decide as a community where we want it to go. And I think this year we split it between local causes, the food bank in Chelan, and in this area, the North Pacific District area, and then I think from the spring the money went to Lutheran World Relief, or it may be flip-flop, but we did local and an area-wide and then national. But that's something that I know for myself, I've developed that. Just having one of those meals a week all year long instead of just in Lent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that big a sacrifice.
No, it isn't.
Of course, I love potatoes, but it's not that big a sacrifice. And we could have potatoes here, you know, as many as you want, two mm-hmm. or three, and they're not that expensive.
Mm-hmm.
For us, the village started that because potatoes were donated, so it's really a free meal, and then all the money. And it gets quite a lot when you start talking about
it.
It's a family.
It really amounts up.
Can
in our congregation, we're just getting started, so we're mainly trying to make our people more aware of it and be conscious of it, like you said. And so we had one Sunday, we asked everybody to bring seeds, packets of seeds this spring, and the next Sunday they could take a packet of seeds or how many ever they would plant. And then in southern Minnesota, which is the one of the bread baskets of the world, they've had trucks going through the different towns and picking up extra garden foods and things that people didn't need and wanted to contribute. And it was taken to Minneapolis, the metropolitan center of Minnesota, where they've needed it, and then gone on up into the Iron Range where we have so much unemployment. And for our congregation, just as a starter, the committee that I'm on, we chose to take a quarter of an acre, which one of the members let us use, he's a farmer, and we went out and planted potatoes on it. And we're taking care of them all. We will pick them and harvest them. But then the other people too will contribute in some way.
That's wonderful. Yeah. One thing we did just to increase awareness in our congregation was to invite people to a dinner, and as part of a community awareness weekend, invited them to dinner, had
gave them three separate colors of tickets. And so they would sit at a table but not know what they were going to be served. And one table was served fried chicken, mashed potatoes, beans, and salad. And another table was served, I think, something like rice and hamburger. And then the last table was served just rice. And then people walked in and we started bringing in these carts full of food to one table, minimal to another, and basically none to another. And there was some real hot discussion by these people who had waited all day to get a meal and
got rice.
Well,
that's a hunger awareness deal dinner. That really is.
Yeah, they did that in one of our churches at Bell City, too, and it really worked.
It's not very fun to sit over here. We just called it.
We invited them
to dinner as part of the last part of a community awareness evening, not telling anybody except the committee what we were going to do.
That's an interesting. See, that's a very interesting way to do it. But they didn't have to pay for it then.
No.
Okay, that's.
But we just brought something like a potluck.
But it was by invitation.
Right, we just invited a group of people to come that had been already involved in this particular community awareness weekend. And just invited them for the supper to end the weekend.
And then you had a discussion then after.
Oh, yes.
That's also very effective when you have those people sitting at the same tables. And you just serve one person at the table. And then, you know, three, by statistics, you know, maybe one person gets a huge meal, three get the medium, and five get nothing, which is just whatever the statistics.
We did that, and what we did, except it was just the different tables, but it was fascinating to watch then people negotiate, first be really grumpy about their meal, and then to watch who shared and who didn't, and to watch that process of reaching out or not, and how some people sort of instinctively went like this with their food, and then of course did share eventually, but that initial sort of, I've got mine and you don't have yours, and how are we going to work this out? It was fascinating.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, we had two times I was involved in a UN World Hunger Awareness demonstration where we divided up tables representing each country of the world. And we used sandwiches and apples as the food products. And you would have like seven people at the United States table, and we did it as a student body, so we would have tons of people in Asia. And at the U.S. table, you'd have stacks and stacks of sandwiches and fruit. At Asia, they'd have to share four sandwiches. And then we used UN representatives to negotiate between all the countries to get the food.
That's interesting. That's a good idea.
And so we had to negotiate just like they do at the UN to get more food products. We have an abundance of wheat here in Russia, or not Russia, but here in the U.S., and we'll, you know, trade off. And so it was kind of a good diplomatic.
You know, and that brings up the idea of games. And there are some games put out, like a game called Star Power, which is a game that is a negotiating game, and Food First has some games that they put out, and Bread for the World has some games that you can put out. But you had something to say.
I saw this happened to be a pastor doing this, which I thought was very good on TV here this one time this winter or whatever it was. But he called, it was for the little children's sermonette, but I thought it was very clever. He brought the children up, and then he said, okay, this group are sitting here, you're Asian, you're Africa, and you're whatever the countries, and you're United States, and so on. Then he had a bag of peanuts, and he had some cute comments all along. But anyway, the fact was that he came over here to the little children who were Asian. They got a half a peanut, just a half, and some got a whole, and some got two peanuts, and so on. He got over the ones in the United States, he started, and they had to hold their hand out, and they just really got more, and some spilled on the floor, you know, in front of the church. And so, you know, these little kids, you know, these kids over here, they had just half a peanut.
They
weren't very happy with these people that had more than they could even hold in their hands. And what do you think, he said? Well, how come they got many more? They just happened to be living in Asia. And he said, how come you're spilling them here? Well, he said, they couldn't hold them. That's many things. And he brought out this thing. It was very effective for those kids. They were really, very disturbed. And they said, Dad, look at here. You have all this. You couldn't even hold it. Now it's a mess. Very effective.
That was the same response I got when I did the hunger dinner with the children at the school. Mm-hmm. I asked them just to tell me their feelings, and they were saying things like, the children who got more food were saying guilty, feeling guilty, feeling selfish, and the other ones were saying, I feel angry, I feel afraid, I feel lonely, I feel hungry, you know. They were really, I can't underestimate those little minds.
Well, some wanted to share right away. Just,
I'll give you some.
Isn't that great?
I'll give you some.
Others just took it and went down the pew.
Isn't that something?
Along with your rice bowl operation, another way, instead of having the people do it in their homes, you could have like a soup dinner at your church, and they don't charge anything, but as the people finish eating, encourage them to put in money into a basket for how much they would have spent on a meal if they went out at a restaurant.
Well, yeah. I forgot to mention that too. We did have that every Sunday during Lent also. And they had soup and bread. Those were the two items that they served. And all you did, you brought your own bowl and your utensils, and then they prepared, a committee prepared the soup. Oh, and then you brought your own bread, but a committee prepared the soup. And then each person who came had that for their Sunday dinner in the evening. And then what other amount of money that you would normally have spent for food that day, you would put aside for the hungry.
That's great.
And a lot of people responded. I was very pleased with that.
Well, there's so many different ideas. Well, I have to go get my boys. But